He removed his sunglasses and smiled a broad smile. "I wasn't sure if you'd remember me, Sheriff." I returned the smile. "You're looking better than the last time I saw you." He shrugged. "You mean almost bleeding to death?" He leaned past me and extended his hand to Vic. "Mike McGroder, out of Denver." I interrupted. "I thought you were Salt Lake City." "Transferred, more work in Colorado." He turned and swept a hand back to introduce the two suited, sunglass-wearing individuals at the door, one male and one female. "But my staff is out of the field office in Salt Lake." Vic nodded and looked past him. "They on a mission?" He shook his head. "No, but they are vegetarians, and one's a vegan." I glanced down at the meatloaf on my plate. "I'm betting that they're about to go into red meat protein arrest."
"Something like that. You know of any place where they can eat?"
Vic barked a laugh.
"Boulder!"
"Not exactly what we're known for here in Wyoming." I thought about it. "I guess they could go up to the deli at the IGA and put something together." He nodded.
"Back up Main and then a left on Fort toward the mountain?"
"Yep." As he sent his team off to graze, I scooted down one so that he'd have a place beside us and looked at Vic. "McGroder was the AIC on the prisoner exchange up the mountain last year."
"I remember,"
she mock-saluted him.
"The clusterfuck."
The agent sat.
"Yeah, the cluster."
He looked at our plates as Dorothy brought over a menu.
"I'll have what they're having."
Mike smiled.
"I've learned never to argue with my Indian scouts in this part of the country."
I forked off a section, steered it into my mouth, and chewed, giving him time to tell me why he was here, but he only sipped his water and made small talk with Vic about her connections with the Department of Justice in Philadelphia, her old stomping ground. He finally turned on his stool and placed his back against the counter, crossing his arms and looking at Main Street.
"It was a nice little town you had here, Sheriff."
"Why are you saying that in past tense?"
"Because it's about to turn into a circus."
I placed my fork on my plate and turned toward him.
"And why is that?"
He sighed.
"You ever hear of Skip Trost?"
"Nope."
"You know, you need to get out more. Skip Trost is the acting deputy U.S. attorney for, among other states, Wyoming, and was sworn in about 5 months ago with little or no federal trial experience, but he had served as a legislative aide."
"I get the picture."
"Well, Trost here is suddenly in the catbird seat and decides that he's going to make a name for himself with the American people by instituting an investigation into nationwide fossil collection and even going so far as initiating a sting to expose illegal collections and sales of state property."
I was glad I'd just about finished my meal because I was rapidly losing my appetite.
"Oh, no."
"Oh, yes. A dinosaur by the name of Jen?" He pulled a piece of paper from his breast pocket and examined a post-it attached.
"The Hope Diamond of Fossils with Unlimited Scientific Value in Research, Exhibition, and Education, and a specimen with a quality of preservation and completeness of structure unlike any ever before seen."
He shrugged and looked out the window.
"As soon as they get all of it out of the ground."
I set my fork on my plate.
"Jen. It's going to make the Scopes monkey trial look like a lemonade stand."
He swiveled back around.
"The High Plains Dinosaur Museum came to the attention of the DOJ when a graduate student in vertebrate paleontology who worked as a part-time ranger over in Yellowstone was approached by a private collector who told him he could supplement his income by selling fossils from the park to the HPDM.
"What happened with that?" Mike smiled as his usual arrived.
"A $75 fine. As it turned out, the old guy had sold stuff to the museum and had lied about where he'd gotten it."
Vic laughed.
"May J. Edgar Hoover's soul rest in peace."
"Not exactly a priority for the Bureau." I sipped my iced tea.
"Okay, so the acting deputy U.S. Attorney Trost has it in for the HPDM, and the wheels of justice are going to grind exceedingly fine until, oh, it's way better than that."
McGroder cleaved off a piece of his meatloaf and soldered it for his mouth before pausing.
"It's not enough of a political powder keg for Trost to want to save the poor people of Wyoming from the rapacious clutches of the High Plains Dinosaur Museum. He pointed his loaded fork at me. This rinky-dink state really has 2 senators?
Yep. Same as Utah and Colorado. And the other 47. You need to get out more, Mike.
Well, the networks and large circulation newspapers really don't give a crap if you cowfolk are getting ripped off, but you throw a few First People Native American Indian types into the mix, and voila, you've got yourself a national platform from which you can draw the attention of the potential electorate to yourself.
He raised a fist in mock support. Save Jen.
What Indians are you talking about?
The Cheyenne Conservancy. A land trust organization has filed an order to desist, citing the Federal Antiquities Act of 1906, prohibiting the removal of fossils from any land owned or controlled by the United States without permission from the Cultural Committee or the Tribal Historical Preservation Office.
The site where that fossil is being excavated isn't the Cheyenne Reservation or federal land. He chewed, and it was almost as if he was enjoying my discomfort.
Actually, it's both. That portion of the ranch is on Cheyenne Conservancy land, and you have to have a permit to dig there. And guess who doesn't have a permit?
The High Plains Dinosaur Museum.
He continued smiling.
It's all right, Walt. You've still got a whole cart. If the possession holds up with the Native American rancher, then the tribe and the federal government are going to be left out in the cold. You see, the rancher bought that particular land from a white homesteader in 2000 and exercised his right to have it held in trust for 25 years by the U.S. Department of the Interior under the Indian Reorganization Act of 1934, which allowed him to not have to pay taxes on it. The problem is that putting your land in trust, either federal or Cheyenne, limits the options of selling it or anything on it.
Vic and I looked at each other for a moment, and then I turned to look at Magruder.
Then all our hopes of avoiding this are pinned to Danny Lone Elk?
He chewed and swallowed, wiping his mouth with a knuckle.
Yeah, I think that's the guy we need to talk to.
Vic shook her head.
Well then, you better talk loud.
This is going to introduce an unwelcome criminal facet to the proceedings. We'd finished our meal, and I was explaining the eccentricities of the Lone Elk situation to Agent Magruder as we made our way back toward my office at a brisk pace. Probably not going to calm things down, huh?
He laughed as we climbed the steps to the courthouse.
All we need now is a bearded lady and a guy who bites the heads off chickens.
Vic's cell rang, and she answered, talking with whom I assumed was my dispatcher, and then tucked the thing back in her jacket.
Ruby says the FBI is at the office.
I glance at Magruder.
No, they're not. They're right here.
She glanced at me. No, our kind of FBI.
Oh. I began walking again. So what happens now?
He folded his overcoat over his arm and patted the inside breast pocket of his suit.
I'm going to the museum to deliver a warrant and was wondering if you'd like to tag along. What are your intentions?
Just a look-see. The only fossil I'm interested in is Jen, but I thought I'd get here early and try and nip some of these shenanigans in the bud, so to speak.
They've barely gotten any of her out of the ground.
He held up his hands. So much the better. I'm just going to meet my guys at your office and then head over to the museum for a tour, probably with the director. What's his name?
Dave Bauman.
With Dave, and see if any of the fossils have stickers on them that read property of the United States government, and then make a phone call to Trost so, without any further ado, he can start warming up his dulcet tones for the interviews tomorrow.
Interviews? Plural, huh?
I glance around at the cottonwoods, flower boxes, and the idyllic environs of our small-town courthouse.
Did I fail to mention that I'm going on vacation this week?
Yes, you did, and as of now, it would appear that you're not. As we rounded the back of the courthouse, I could see a very large Indian reclined on the steps of the old Carnegie Library that served as my office. He was eyeing the 2 bureau people who were eating what looked to be lettuce wraps and drinking bottled water.
Uh-oh. Looks like a standoff.
Vic chimed in. Wounded knee 3. By the time that we got there, Brandon White Buffalo, possibly the largest Indian on both the Cheyenne and Crow reservations, had crushed his cigarette out and, standing his full 7 feet 2 inches, pushed off from the steps to greet us.
"Aho, lawman!"
I gestured toward the giant. "The real FBI," Vic added. "Fucking big Indian." I watched as Brandon pocketed the butt.
"Don't you know those things stunt your growth?"
The operator of the White Buffalo Sinclair station held out a hand with fingers that looked like a collection of Polish sausages and enveloped my own.
"It's a nasty habit, but it is easy to quit. I have done it many times."
I tried not to grimace as he applied his legendary grip.
"How are you, Brandon?"
"My heart is heavy, lawman. The Cheyenne have lost a great leader, and it's not a time when we can spare such men."
He sparked an eye at my under-sheriff. "Miss Moretti?" She put her hand on her sidearm.
"Do not try and pick me up."
Brandon made a habit of lifting people from the ground as a greeting, but a well-placed kick had preempted the tradition with Vic a few months back. He nodded and glanced at McGroder, who extended his hand and spoke up quickly.
"I'd rather not be picked up either."
Throwing a thumb over his shoulder, Brandon smiled and turned back to me. "The ones who don't smoke are inside, including both the chiefs." As far as I knew, the Cheyenne were an autarky, so I was interested to see who the other chief might be.
"Henry with you?"
"No, the bear isn't a part of the party. He prefers to work outside official channels, but you know that."
The buffalo studied me.
"You are disappointed?"
I shrugged. "I haven't seen Henry in a couple of weeks, and my granddaughter's going to be in town.
The little brother is back to seeing the divorcee up at Rocky Boy."
I glanced around and dropped my voice.
"Are we ever going to get to meet her?"
"Who knows?"
The 375-pound Crow-Cheyenne hybrid turned and shook hands with the special agent as he introduced himself and then shot a look at the herbivores on the bench.
"Those are yours?"
McGroder nodded and studied the giant, probably making the connection between him and his uncle, the man who had saved me on the mountain.
"Yeah, I made him leave their trench coats at home."
"We did not call you."
I had to smile as McGroder flexed his fingers, attempting to get the circulation back in them.
"No."
"Then why are you here, if you don't mind my asking?"
Mike adjusted his sunglasses and looked up at the big man.
"At the behest of the American people."
Brandon gestured toward himself.
"Are we not the American people?"
"Certainly you are."
He looked at me for help, but I was going to let him tread water on his own. The agent licked his lip, smiled, and breathed deep.
"We're just here to make sure that everybody plays fair."
Brandon White Buffalo's head tilted to one side as he considered the AIC, before laughing. He turned and mounted the steps to my office, his gigantic legs carrying him up like the dinosaurs that had held my imagination recently.
"You are about 200 years too late, agent in charge."
McGroder turned to look at me as the glass door swung closed, the gold and black letters of my department shuddering with a soft impact.
"I have a feeling that the next week is going to be interesting around here."
"I hope you're wrong." He smiled, waved goodbye to Vic, and then collected his people from the bench.
"Hey, where is the High Plains Dinosaur Museum, anyway?"
I pointed. "South end of town, across from the high school. It used to be the Moose Lodge, and before that, a carpet outlet." He thought about it.
"The tin building that I saw on the way in?"
I shrugged as Vic and I started up the steps to our defunct library offices.
"We take our institutions where we find them."
He pulled out his phone as the trio started toward the black Tahoe with government plates parked at the curb.
"I don't suppose it would do any good to ask for your cell number?"
"You can ask." He shook his head, and they loaded up and started off, catching the light on Main and disappearing around the corner. Vic finally turned.
"I've got a question."
I gave her my full attention, the way I always did.
"Skip?"
She pulled the door open and entered. A deputy U.S. attorney by the name of Skip?
I told Brandon that he couldn't smoke in here.
My dispatcher answered a phone and asked the caller to please wait, then hit the hold button. I looked around. Where is everybody?
Ruby nodded her head toward the hallway behind her desk. Your office.
I walked past Sizer Pretoria's door and could see that Doubletuff, my other deputy, who had just come back from medical leave, was standing on the other side of Sancho's desk. The skin on the side of his face was mottled from having been burned, and I was still getting used to the eye patch.
How you doing, Troop?
He did his best Blackbeard imitation as Vic and I crowded in the doorway.
Arrgh!
The Basco urged me in. Boss, we need an opinion here.
I've got people in my office. It'll just take a second.
I entered Sizer Pretoria's immaculate but tiny room and stood there with the other two men, Vic holding at the doorway.
What's up?
Sancho gestured toward Doubletuff.
DT's got a new eye.
What with Danny Lone Elk, like we didn't have enough ocular problems as of late? I turned and looked at him.
Well, let's see it.
He glanced around the room, his one-eyed gaze on Vic, and then peeled the patch back, leaving it on his forehead.
It's a 14 millimeter.
We all leaned in and looked at the artificial orb, Doubletuff staring straight ahead, and as nonchalant as you can be with three people peering into your fake eye.
It looks great.
He seemed doubtful.
Really?
Yep. If I didn't know any better, I'd say it was real. I glanced at Sancho for a little backup.
Right?
Yeah, it looks great.
It's the wrong color.
We all looked at Vic.
What are you talking about?
She stepped in closer and stared at Doubletuff.
What color did you order?
I didn't order it, they did. It's hazel blue.
She studied him some more.
Your real eye is more green.
She straightened and looked at Sizer Pretoria, me, and finally back to DT.
Take it back and have them order up another one.
Doubletuff cleared his throat.
Oh, I think it's close enough. Go back and have them order up one that matches.
She glanced at us again.
I can't believe you assholes were going to let him wander around here looking like a fucked-up husky because you two were afraid of hurting his delicate feelings. Shame on the both of you.
As she stalked out, we all stood there in the uncomfortable silence, and then I leaned in and studied the eye again.
Maybe a little greener, but it looks good, Troop.
Sancho nodded.
Really good. A little greener, maybe. I mean, you might as well get it right. The insurance is paying for it.
The tribal delegation was waiting for me in my office, sitting in my guest chairs and reading from the plaques and studying the photos on my walls. Brandon thumped a finger on one. What are all these sheriffs doing in front of this train? I turned the corner and sat at my desk, across from Cheyenne Chief Lonnie Littlebird and Tribal Police Chief Lolo Long, as Vic lingered near the doorway. The old sheriff, Lucian. That was the last run of the Western Star back in 72. Lolo was the first to ask.
The Western Star?
The Wyoming Sheriff's Association had this yearly junket that they used to do, a train by the name of the Western Star that ran from Cheyenne to Evanston and back, 24 drunk sheriffs shooting sporting clays off a flatbed. Chief Long pulled a handful of blue-black hair back from her face, revealing the sickle-shaped scar at her temple and the dark, dark eyes. Out of uniform, she was wearing jeans, a black T-shirt and a weathered leather jacket, all of which seemed to fit in remarkable ways.
Sounds like fun.
She wanted to continue the interrogation, but I cut her off and gestured around the room. The few plaques are his, but he didn't want them, and I never got around to taking them down.
What do you have time for these days?
I smiled at my reservation comrade in arms. The job, Chief Long. The job. I took my hat off and set it on my desk, crown down, and introduced Vic to the group.
We've met.
Lolo's head lifted and she spoke.
Undersheriff?
Vic's voice carried just a little edge to it.
Chief?
I addressed the rest of the war party. Chief Littlebird.
Lonnie laughed. Too many chiefs. And not enough Indians. Yes, it is so.
I glanced at Brandon, who was still standing, and then back at Lonnie. Is this a formal call?
I am afraid so.
Danny Lone Elk?
He nodded and leaned back in his wheelchair. Just so you are aware, we did not do this.
Do what?
Call the FBI.
Since Wounded Knee 2, when the Department of Justice shows up, I rarely think that it's the tribe that has called them.
Lolo played with the woven horsehair zipper slide on her jacket. Danny had made commitments with the tribe that upon his death his ranch was to be signed over to the Cheyenne Conservancy, and that is our only concern at this time. I am not sure if the fossil in question is part of that land or an antiquity that is dealt with differently. Danny mentioned that a home for the dinosaur might be made on the reservation in Lame Deer at the Chief Dullknife College, or that there might be a sale of a limited number of replicas of the skeleton, or the donation of some of the bones to the tribal headquarters, but that above all, the proceeds from such a sale should go exclusively to his children and grandson.
What's your involvement?
She leaned forward and smiled a dazzling smile that made my toes tingle. I'm the director of the Cheyenne Conservancy.
So you were in a sort of partnership with Danny?
Yes.
Has anybody talked to Dave Bauman about this?
I don't know.
I glanced up at Vic, who rolled her eyes. Well, it's going to start getting complicated now that the feds are involved.
Lolo studied me. Did you call them?
No.
Then who did?
Vic smiled.
Skip!
Chapter 3.
What do you mean you can't pick us up in Billings?
Glancing around the reception area at my assembled staff as we took on our greatest challenge at the end of the day coffee clutch, I sighed through the telephone line in an attempt to get out of trouble with the greatest legal mind of our time.
There's a big mess going on among the Cheyenne, the High Plains Dinosaur Museum, and the federal government, and I'm betting I won't be able to get free tomorrow. The acting deputy U.S. attorney is going to be here, and then I'll know more.
Acting deputy U.S. attorney? What the hell does that mean?
I don't know. I guess it means he acts like a deputy attorney or something.
I hugged the phone in for a little privacy.
Can't you fly into Sheridan?
I'm traveling with a 5-month-old, and they don't have a leather helmet and goggles to fit her.
There was a pause.
Have you ever traveled with a 5-month-old?
The second time I'd been asked that today. I tried to remember if I ever had.
I think your mother did. I was just ground support.
Did you get the pack and play in the car seat?
I lied. Yep.
You're lying.
Uncanny. As fast as dog can trot.
If you can't borrow them, then get them over in Sheridan when you come to pick us up.
So you are flying into Sheridan.
Why don't you rent a car?
The phone went dead in my hand as I handed it back to my dispatcher and my guideline for all things domestic. What's a pack and play?
Ruby looked at Sizer Pretoria, who seemed to have an innate ability to describe child-rearing accoutrements in terms I could understand.
Portable solitary confinement.
Ah, I smiled, pressing the joke.
And the car seat?
It's a seat that goes in your car,
the Basco grunted.
I've got all that stuff.
Ruby hung up the phone.
Walt, you can borrow them, but I'm thinking you should buy. This is not the only time they're going to be here, that is, if you don't keep royally messing things up.
I glanced at Lucian, who sometimes showed up at these unofficial end-of-the-day meets, and then the rest of my staff.
Everybody seems to think that, huh?
They all nodded, but Lucian was the first to speak.
You're not off to a good start, troop.
Vic laughed. Like you're a knowledgeable source.
I cupped my chin in my palm and postulated as I looked at the previous sheriff of Absaroka County.
I'm trying to remember what 5-month-olds are like, what they can do.
Lucian mumbled,
they shit a lot.
Vic bumped him with her shoulder.
When was the last time you even held a baby? The Eisenhower administration?
Ruby agreed.
You're going to need diapers.
Is there a service in town?
They don't do that anymore. They're disposable.
She glanced at Sizer Vittoria again.
But I'm betting Sancho is our go-to guy on all of this.
He rolled his shoulders.
Like I said, we've got all that stuff, and you're welcome to it, but you might be better off to buy all new. Anthony's over a year old and escapes from everything like a miniature Houdini, but we still use some of it.
He smiled.
You've got a long road ahead of you, Grandpa.
He thought about it.
At 5 months, they can sit up, scoot, roll, and maybe crawl a little.
Can they talk?
Babble, mostly. Kind of like a bad drunk.
Ruby smiled. As I recall, Katie talked early.
Yep, and she's never stopped.
Double Tough ventured an opinion.
You're going to need a high chair.
We all turned to look at him. He adjusted his eye patch, having put it back on.
Why? I got nephews and nieces.
I pushed off Ruby's counter and stretched, glancing up at the Seth Thomas on the wall and wondering why all these people were still here, other than to antagonize me.
This grandfather stuff is complicated.
Ruby laughed.
You haven't seen the half of it.
I turned back to Sizer Pretoria.
So I don't suppose I could impose on you to help me buy all these things?
He nodded.
And put it together?
What?
You have to assemble the stuff, and I'm thinking it would be best if you had everything done.
I nodded some more, getting used to taking orders again.
At my place?
Vic stared at me.
Where were you thinking they were going to stay?
I hadn't really thought about it, but wouldn't it be easier if they were in town?
She shook her head.
Oh, no.
You've got a brand new house.
Nice try.
And if they need anything, they wouldn't have to drive 20 miles.
Absolutely not.
I turned back to Sizer Pretoria.
If you and Maria will help me out with this, I'll give you the rest of the day off.
He made a face.
The day is over. How about tomorrow?
He had me over a barrel, and he knew it. I pulled out all the cash I had in my wallet and handed it to him. Will that cover it?
He nodded, stuffing the bills in his shirt pocket.
If not, I'll get the rest in petty cash.
Deal.
Leave the receipt so I can reimburse.
I turned to Lucian, suddenly remembering the flask in my coat pocket, the one that I'd taken from the recently deceased.
Hey, old man, I need your opinion on something.
I pulled it out and handed it to him. His eyes brightened at the prospect.
Now you're talking about my kind of baby.
He unscrewed the top.